Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and thanks for listening to WAMS on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I'm Burke Allen on this sunny Thursday afternoon here in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. So how much do you know about the U.S. Constitution? Did you know there's a Constitution Day coming up in September, September 17th? And the Constitution embodies Western civilization's concept of equality. Do other civilizations have a similar document? What's the difference between concentrated power and separated power, government of the people versus tyranny? Lots to think about in time for Constitution Day. And historian and former U.S. congressional candidate William Federer is going to join us in just a couple of moments. He's the host of the American Minute radio show and the author of several books, including Prayers for Presidents, The Original 13, and others. And we'll get into things like how many folks were involved in writing the Constitution? Why didn't Thomas Jefferson sign it? What's the purpose of the government? What's the difference between the federal Constitution and your local state Constitution? And also we'll talk a little bit about the Islamic law versus our own constitutional amendments. So lots to talk about today. If you'd like to be a part of the program, our number to call is 718-506-1944, 718-506-1944 to be a part of the program. And let's go now to Bill Federer, who joins us live from St. Louis. He's the host of American Minute, and we're talking the Constitution today. Hey, Bill, thanks for being on the program.
Oh, great to be with you, Brooke.
Now, you've written many books about this. You had your own run at Congress, so you know your way around here in Washington, D.C. Did at any point you become jaded about the Constitution and just how important that document is to the way we all live?
Yeah, it made me realize that all the Constitution is a limit on power. And in my research, I found out that prior to the U.S., the default setting for human government was monarchy, that all the way back to the Sargon of Akkadia and the Cyrus of Persia and Anaxerpal of Assyria and the Egyptian pharaohs and Alexander the Great, Julius Caesar, and the Indian Maharajas and Chinese emperors and the Muslim sultans and, you know, the King of Spain, King of England, Aztec Montezumas. No matter where you go in the world, power gravitates to being held by one person. And no matter what era of history and no matter what part of the globe, that's sort of like in the human DNA, you know. And then America, because of our 3,000-mile ocean between us and our monarch, the King of England, we had this unique opportunity in world history to experiment with self-government. And we made the people the king and the politicians the servants. We took the power of a monarch and separated it into three branches, and we separated it, again, federal to state level. Then we tied this federal Frankenstein up with 10 handcuffs we call the first 10 amendments, before we threw the switch. In other words, the founders went to great lengths to pull these magnets apart from each other to separate power, because their one fear was that power would concentrate and get back into the hands of a dictator, and then all the rights and freedoms of the people would be gone. And so, in other words, they designed a system of government that would work inefficient on purpose, slow to making good decisions, but thank God it was slow to making bad decisions. Unfortunately, over time, after every crisis, we've seen a gradual reconcentration of power. So after the Civil War, it was great that Lincoln ended slavery, but in the process, he concentrated a lot of power away from the states into the federal government. And Woodrow Wilson got us through World War I, but he concentrated power in the federal government with the Federal Reserve and federal income tax. And Franklin Roosevelt got us through the Depression. Some say he lengthened it, but he concentrated power in the federal government with all his New Deal programs. And Lyndon Johnson concentrated power with his welfare state war on poverty. And even President Bush concentrated power with the war on terror. And the government now reads all your emails and tracks every credit card purchase you do and can even listen to your conversations when your phone's not even turned on. I mean, the only way to make sure is to take the battery out. And it's all good in the sense that it has stopped another terrorist attack and it's freed slaves, you know. But in the process, over time, over these 200-some-odd years of America, you stand back from the tree, look at the forest, you see the trend, and we've moved back to concentrating power. And now we have a new administration that's taken over banks and car companies and the life and death healthcare decisions of every citizen, and with 40 unelected czars. And it's a tremendous reconcentration of power back in the direction of prior to America's coming on the scene. It's the old saying, he who dictates is effectively the dictator. And so we're moving into away from Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And it's a few people that get to make the decisions.
Our guest is Bill Federer. He's the host of American Minute, former congressional candidate. You may have seen Bill on C-SPAN, on Fox News, The O'Reilly Factor, heard him on NPR, seen him on MSNBC. And, you know, in the last couple of years, Bill, this Tea Party movement has taken hold and is, in some instances, sweeping across America, with a lot of people getting really excited about it. Do you think that's in direct relation to the watering down of our Constitution?
Yeah, definitely. People are waking up. I don't know if it's almost like those that want to concentrate power are making a mad dash at the gate. They want to slam it closed before the rest of America wakes up and gets a clue as to what has been happening. And so there's this push to push through a lot of laws and things which will give the government, a lot of power. And so a lot of people are saying, hey, look, in 30 years, we've gone from the largest creditor nation in the world to the largest debtor nation in the world. And there's no plan by the government to stop the leak. We're continuing to get in debt. And pretty soon, and they say within 20 years, the largest item on our federal budget will just be paying the interest on the debt. And then that brings up another point. Who is buying the debt? I mean, when you spend more money than you take in, you got to borrow. And who are we borrowing from? Well, we're selling treasury bills to China. And so China is buying our debt and financing our overspending. And at some point, they're going to call the cards, and they're going to take their advantage. They're building a first class military with the highest tech, submarines and missiles and satellites. And yet we're cutting back on our military in unprecedented ways. There's a global shift going on, and a lot of people are feeling like, are we exiting the stage? Again, there's been 6,000 years of world history. And every country gets its period to sit on the center stage. And once they leave, they very seldom go back again. And so the question is, are we slipping? At one point in time, Mongolia, Genghis Khan, had the largest empire in the world. It went from Korea to Moscow to Baghdad to India. People can't even find Mongolia on a map today. Greece, at one point under Alexander the Great, it was the biggest empire in the world. I mean, Greece is totally bankrupt today, you know. You look at how the glimpses that countries get to be center stage, and the feeling is that maybe we squandered our opportunity, and those that are in charge are, letting us sink.
Now, Bill, you ran for Congress and gave Dick Gephardt a great run for his money, as I recall, with a lot less money than Gephardt spent. Is there a desire from you to get in there and try to fix the system? And if so, and if you found yourself a congressman or a senator, what would be amongst the first things you would do to try to turn this around, or is it too late?
It's up to my wife to let me know if I'm going to run again. Right now, she's not too thrilled with the idea. I did a couple impressions. I was shocked to find out how totally unorganized it all is. You know, you think, the Republican Party is saying this, the Democrat Party is saying this. It's the Republican leadership in the House. It's 2-year terms. And they're getting new staff in and new staff out, and congressmen get elected, and then they don't get reelected. And so it's like trying to build a log house with logs floating down a river, and some logs you get lost, and you try to put new ones in, and all the – so it's constantly in flux. And every time I'd call up to the NRCC, I'd talk to another young staffer because the other one went on to some higher job. I was acutely aware of how totally unorganized it is. But anyway, nevertheless, I do feel this is I heard somebody say, we have the worst form of government except for all others.
Right, sure.
And, you know, yes, it is frustrating with a lot of negative politics, but look at what happens in the rest of the world. It's military coups, it's killing and so forth. So hopefully we can maintain this form of government because we have, you know, prior to the U.S. coming on the scene, there were less than a dozen alternatives to monarchy in all of world history. You know, Athens had a democracy for 200 years. The judges in Israel, you know, for a while. There was the Roman Republic for a while until Julius Caesar turned it into a dictatorship. You know, the Italian city-states for a while. Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth, and then the Holland, the seven Netherlands provinces together. But other than that, most of world history was monarchy. So we have something unique here. It's worth preserving. We've maximized individual liberty. I tell people, when power is concentrated, the state is supreme. When power is separated, the individual is supreme. And our founders wanted to maximize the freedom of the individual. Anyway, I could get on and on in that, but it is a unique country. And now we're seeing the advent of Islam, which ironically enough is incompatible with our form of government. And if you'd like, I could give comment.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that, and it's been in the news again with the controversy over this proposed mosque in Lower Manhattan, and your thought on Islamic law as opposed to you know, our constitution, the constitutional amendments, and is there a place for us to all meet in the middle in this great melting pot that is America?
History shows that the advance of Islam goes in three stages. One of them, the first stage is they move in and they're nice. And they're so nice, people say, let more of them in. And they get an imam. And the imam teaches them they need to follow the Quran closer and not be good friends with infidels and start wearing the burqas and to, you know, eat the halal food instead of the haram food. And anyway, become more. And so the people in the neighborhood begin to see more burqas and they get uncomfortable, sort of like gang colors. And, you know, the feeling in their gut, they just feel uncomfortable. And they begin to move out. And so as they move out, it goes into the second stage where they begin to take over the neighborhood. And then finally, those that resist move out, at some point, violence takes place. And when they finally go, then the whole neighborhood is assimilated, and it's called the House of Islam, Dar al-Islam. And so the goal we have seen over 1,400 years is that when they come in, they eventually set up Sharia law. So let's look at Sharia law. Our whole U.S. form of government is based on a simple concept that everybody is equal. There is no concept of equality in Islamic law. Allah loves the infidel who has, Allah loves the Muslim who has submitted, and Allah hates the infidel. So they have two sets of laws. The infidels are called dhimmi, D-H-I-M-M-I, dhimmi. They have no legal standing in court against a Muslim. A dhimmi cannot even testify against a Muslim. So if you're in a car accident against a Muslim, you lose. Women in Islam, it takes two women to testify in court against one man. A woman gets half the inheritance that a man gets. In Islam, Surah 434 says that a man can beat his wife. And there were cases in Germany where a woman gets beat, goes to the judge, and the judge says, oh, you're Islamic, it's okay for you to be beaten. There's cases like that in a lot of the, you know, Pakistan and so forth, where they have child brides, these little girls getting married, and it's okay with the law. So these are differences with our faith. I mean, simple things like we have an Eighth Amendment, no cruel and unusual punishment. Sharia law says to cut off the hand of a thief. You know, we have laws that if a man rapes a woman, he gets in trouble. But in Islamic law, if a man rapes a woman, she also gets whipped 100 times for being used as a tool of Satan to tempt the man. We have a 13th Amendment outlawing slavery. In Islam, Muhammad himself owned slaves, and so how can they condemn slavery? There's never been an abolitionist movement in the Muslim world. You can't name any abolitionist leaders. I mean, we can name Lincoln and, you know, all the different preachers that did that. We have a Second Amendment, the right to possess and bear arms. In Islam, dhimmi, non-Muslims, are forbidden to own weapons. We have the amendment that allows alcohol, you know, the 21st Amendment. Yet in Islam, right, they do not allow the sale of alcohol. And so there's a difference there that is incompatible. And the fact is that their goal is to have Sharia law in place there's a problem for us.
Bill Federer is our guest today, and you bring up some points that I know resonate with an awful lot of our listeners. If you'd like to visit Bill online, your website is AmericanMinute.com, is that right?
Right, AmericanMinute.com. I send out a free daily email, and then a new book, What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, History of Islam in the United States. I mean, one of the pilgrim ships was captured by the Muslim pirates, sold into slavery in Morocco, but it's a fascinating overview of history.
It sounds fascinating and frankly, in some ways, scary once you look back on it. But as they say, those who don't look back on history are doomed to repeat it. Bill Federer has been our guest today on WAMS. And if you'd like more information, be sure to log on to his website. It is AmericanMinute.com. Bill, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thank you, Burke.
I'm Burke Allen, live in Washington, D.C. Thanks for listening. Now go out and make it a great day.